At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
On the afternoon of January 13, 1996, 9-year-old Amber Hagerman was riding her bike in a parking lot of an abandoned grocery store in Arlington, Texas, when a man in a black pickup truck pulled up beside her, grabbed her off her bike, and drove away. 4 days later, Amber's body was found in a creek just a few miles away. 29 years have passed and Amber's case remains unsolved, but her name has never faded and her legacy continues to save lives. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. So first off, I want to congratulate all of you. We've made it to 100 episodes. And for the 100th episode, we wanted to cover Amber's case because it's responsible for the Amber Alert, and the Amber Alert has helped save thousands of children. And although Amber's legacy has saved many kids from the same tragedy that she suffered from, we still need justice for her as well. We don't want her story just to be one of tragedy where we don't get justice for her and her family. So although it's a little bit more known and not necessarily the type of case we would cover, I think with the impact that Amber has had on many families throughout the country, the least we can do is cover her case here. Now, I do want to take a second to talk about this 100th episode, because not everyone thought we would get here. Hell, I didn't know if we would get here, because it's tough doing the type of cases we're doing. Not everybody is interested in these more obscure cases that are unresolved. It can be difficult for some people mentally to leave this case not knowing what happened to these victims, but it's a necessary evil. And to be completely transparent with you guys, and I think I've said it before, I'm very fortunate that I get to do what I love. And although it's tough on me mentally, I do get something out of this, feeling like I'm giving back. And with Crime Weekly, although we're talking about a lot of tragedy, some of these cases are very well known, and it's a multi-part series, and we do have moments of levity. And I just candidly sometimes feel guilty because I'm able to provide for me and my family by covering these stories. And that's something that I battle with. And so part of the reason, I would say the majority of the reason I started Detective Perspective was not for any other reason than to use my voice and to use my reach to help those in need, to give a voice to the voiceless, to know that, yeah, these cases may not get the most clicks or downloads or views, but knowing that these families who are desperate for some type of attention are getting just a little something from me and the people that do decide to listen or watch these episodes, that means more to me than anything. I actually had Haley reach out to me today. She's wrote many of the scripts here, and she informed me that some of the families of the victims that I've covered on Detective Perspective will be attending CrimeCon. And she was like, would you like to meet him? And I'm like, of course I want to meet him. I want to meet all of them. We got to take a group picture together because we're connected forever. After I cover these cases, I can't help but think of these people. And I think of them not only as, you know, victims of this case, but also the lessons that they can teach me and you as well. And Amber is no exception. We still have to get justice for her, but there's a lot that we can learn from this case. Whether you're an auntie, an uncle, a brother, a sister, a mother, or father, this can happen to anyone. And yes, it was 29 years ago, but it's still happening today. And so to kind of wrap up this 100th episode conversation here before we dive into it, because I want to give Amber most of the attention here, because I feel even weird talking about this. This is long overdue. If you're watching on video, this will mean something. If you're watching on audio, you probably can skip it. But I have the 100,000 subscriber plaque from YouTube. Some of you have seen it in the background here. And this is, I go back and forth on these, right? Because it's a big accomplishment. But then I think of how we got here and I wrestle with it. So what I choose to do is look at this in a positive way, but from the perspective of not 100,000 people watching me, but 100,000 people hearing about these stories and using this platform as a conduit for the families who need it. So to me, this plaque doesn't represent the amount of subscribers that we have. It's an indication of how many people we're reaching. And when I look at it from that perspective, I feel much better about it. And it does inspire me to reach the gold, because I know if I have the gold plaque, that's a million different people who are hearing or seeing these cases. And that is what drives me. So I do want to thank each and every one of you for supporting me and supporting these families. And I hope I'm making you all proud. I always have room to improve, but I'm going to continue covering these cases for as long as the families and you guys will allow me to. So that's all I have. Thank you for giving me a few moments to talk about it, but I want to make this episode about Amber. Before I start with the story, I just want to mention that this episode is going to focus on the facts of the case. It's not going to focus on the aftermath or a lot of the theories out there. This is going to be about giving you the foundation of what happened to Amber, because that's what I do on every episode, so we're not going to treat this any differently. Let's dive into this week's case. Amber Hagerman was born on November 25th, 1986 in Texas to her parents Richard and Donna. 4 years later, Amber became a big sister when her brother Ricky was born. In 1994, Richard and Donna separated. Amber and Ricky stayed with their mother in Arlington, Texas, a city within the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, and at the time, Arlington had a population of around 300,000 people. But despite its size, it still felt like a safe place to raise your kids. Children rode their bikes and played outside without much supervision. And I also want to mention that times were different back then. I say back then, 1996, Jesus, we're getting old. But it was. Anybody who's from that time, you know what I'm talking about. People didn't worry as much about their kids being kidnapped. Although it did happen, it wasn't as much of a common occurrence. Today, we have to worry about it much more, unfortunately. By January of 1996, Amber was a third grade student and a member of the Girl Scouts. She loved music and writing, singing, playing with her Barbies, and riding her bike. Her father, Richard, told the Associated Press, quote, "She's a great little girl. Everybody likes her. She's loving and a little wild. She'd be on her bike kind of showing off riding without using her hands." We've all done that, right? If you've ridden a bike before, you know you've attempted it. Don't lie. On Saturday, January 13th, 1996, Richard planned to pick up 9-year-old Amber and 5-year-old Ricky from their grandparents' house on Highland Drive in Arlington. At 3:10 p.m., Donna dropped the kids off, and as soon as they got there, they asked if they could ride their bikes while waiting for their dad to arrive, and their grandparents said yes, they could go around the block one time. But Amber and Ricky ended up riding 2 blocks away to a parking lot of an old abandoned Winn-Dixie store. The lot had a loading dock with a ramp, and the kids loved riding their bikes up and down it. And again, this is something as a kid, you know what I'm talking about. Nobody just wants to ride on flat ground. They're looking for those little jumps and those little ramps to explore. And this is a very common occurrence. I think we can all relate to it. And I do want to stop and talk about what this area looked like back in January of 1996. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see the map of the area right now. And if you're listening on audio, I'm going to describe it to you. The Winn-Dixie was located in the southwest corner, farthest from both streets. The laundromat was positioned directly east of Winn-Dixie, and the tint shop sat just north of the laundromat. The ramp that Amber and Ricky loved riding on was between the laundromat and the side of the Winn-Dixie. And just behind both buildings, on the south side, were residential homes, and their fenced-in backyards were right up against the back of the businesses. And as you can see here, I had like this cartoon-style drawing of what the layout was back in 1996. I'm also real quickly going to throw up a Google Map image of what the area looks like right now. As you can see, it's a restaurant. Now, it still appears that it's an auto tint store, which is interesting. Oh, 29 years later, still the same type of store. But it looks like there's like a taco place there and stuff now. But you can see in the photo that you have those residences right behind it. And if you compare that to what it was in 1996, that's pretty much the same. All right, so let's go back to January 13th when Amber and Ricky were riding their bikes in the parking lot. After a few minutes, Ricky started getting nervous about disobeying his grandparents, and Amber told him he could go back home if he wanted to, but she was going to stay and keep riding her bike. When Ricky got home, he told their grandparents that Amber was still in the parking lot, and that's when they told him to go back and get her. When he got there, Amber was gone. He couldn't find her anywhere, so he turned around and went back to the house and told his grandparents that he couldn't find her. Amber's grandfather immediately got into his truck and drove straight to the parking lot. When he arrived, he saw police officers and Amber's pink bike lying on the ground. According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, he asked what had happened and was told that at 3:18 p.m., a 78-year-old U.S. veteran and former sheriff deputy named Jimmy had seen something from his backyard. Jimmy's backyard backed up against the same parking lot where Amber was riding her bike, and he told police that he saw a black pickup truck pull up beside her, and he went on to describe the truck as a single cab, full-size truck from the 1980s or 1990s. And he said the truck looked like it was in good shape. No visible damage, no chrome, no striping, and a clear rear window. Jimmy went on to say that he had seen the same truck earlier in the day parked outside the laundromat. And I think that's extremely important, and we're going to visit it again in the perspective. So Jimmy goes on to say that after this truck pulls up to Amber, a man jumped out, and he was either white or Hispanic, in his 20s or 30s, with a medium build and dark hair. He wasn't over 6 feet tall, but Jimmy said he was, quote, not big, but very fast. The man grabbed Amber and pulled her off her bike. She kicked and screamed as she was forced into the truck through the driver's side door. The driver then got into the truck as well and drove off. He then headed away from a nearby highway and instead toward the center of Arlington. Jimmy ran back inside immediately and called the police. And again, if we put that map up on the screen here, for anybody saying, you know, why didn't Jimmy intervene? The distance here looks like it's close, but not that close. And this happened in a matter of seconds. So while Jimmy's sitting there, his brain's trying to process it. And as it's doing that, it's already too late. They're already probably back inside the truck as he's figuring out, is this someone who knows this little girl or is this a problem? And when he realizes that it's actually a problem, it's too late. And from where he is with the property line being there and the fence being there, there's no way he could physically get over there in time. They would have already been gone. More than likely, he was up on his deck or on his porch. So he's a significant distance away, and there's no way for him to intervene. And although I haven't had the chance to talk to Jimmy based on his background and what he was involved in before that with public service, I don't know if he had kids or not, but even if he didn't, I'm sure this is something that haunts him every day if he's still alive. Now, because Amber's bike was left behind and also because Jimmy heard her screaming, the police believed right away that she had been abducted. They immediately entered her name into a nationwide missing persons database and sent out alerts to surrounding law enforcement agencies. And as many of you already know, at this point in time, there was no Amber Alert system to broadcast her disappearance. Amber's case would later change that. We're going to take a break. We got a lot more to cover. We'll be right back. Your nighttime bedroom temperature can have a huge impact on your sleep quality. So if you wake up too hot or too cold, I highly recommend you check out Miracle Made's bed sheets. Miracle Made sheets are inspired by NASA and use silver-infused fabrics that are temperature-regulating so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. I've talked about this before. No matter how many times I say it, it's still just as disgusting. Traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. It can lead to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses, and overall, it's just gross. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning antibacterial bedding such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth and require up to 3 times less cleaning. So yes, they're temperature regulating, they're self-cleaning, but they're also extremely comfortable. I've said it before, they're luxuriously comfortable, but without the high price tag of other luxury brands, and they feel just as nice, if not nicer, than some of the sheets that I've slept on in 5-star hotels. So head over to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use my promo code DETECTIVE at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. And Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made by going to trymiracle.com/detective and use code DETECTIVE to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%. Again, that's trymiracle.com/detective, code DETECTIVE, to treat yourself. Thank you to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. All right, we're back. And before break, I was mentioning that law enforcement entered Amber into a missing persons database and also contacted surrounding law enforcement agencies. The FBI was also called in to help, and together, local police and federal agents swarmed the area, searching in every direction for signs of Amber. Investigators also began looking into the possibility that this was a family-related abduction. They interviewed Amber's relatives and quickly ruled them out after taking statements and administering polygraphs. They also looked into close friends and family, but nothing came from that either. After ruling out those close to Amber, the police feared the worst, that she had been taken by a stranger. And why is that the worst? You don't want this to happen ever, but if it's someone who has a connection to your victim, you can follow the breadcrumbs. You can reverse engineer who potentially is your main suspect. But when this is a complete random act of violence and the perpetrator has no connection to your victim, think about how hard that is, how vast that suspect pool becomes. So again, although you never want this to happen, if it's someone who has a direct tie to your victim, it makes it a lot easier to solve for the investigator. So yeah, when they say worst fear, it being someone who has no connection that you can even identify, that's the worst fear of all detectives. However, they kept searching for other witnesses, but unfortunately, no one else had seen what Jimmy had saw, which was critical to this case. Otherwise, we would have no clue what happened to Amber. And Amber's family did everything they could to spread the word. They put up flyers all over town and even went on the news pleading for help. Donna also gave a couple statements that completely broke my heart. Initially, she said, quote, "Don't hurt my baby, please, she's an innocent child." And she also spoke directly to Amber saying, quote, "I know you're scared, I'm scared too." The search pressed on, with officers only stopping to sleep. By the end of the second day, dozens of tips had come in, but by the end of the third day, there was still no sign of Amber. Then, on January 17th, only 4 days in, there was a break in the case, but it wasn't the kind anyone had been hoping for. At around 11:40 p.m., a man walking his dog near the Forest Ridge apartment complex close to Texas 360 and northeast of Green Oaks Boulevard, about 5 miles from the Winn-Dixie parking lot, when he spotted the body of a little girl floating face down near a drainage culvert in a secluded creek. That body was Amber. The man immediately called 911 and law enforcement rushed to the scene. Now, I want to give you guys a warning here before I describe this next part. It's a little tough to hear, but I think it's important to the story, and I'm going to explain why in a second. One of the detectives later described what it was like to find Amber, who was only wearing a single sock at the time. He said, quote, "We rolled her over, and I caught her head in my hands. She had several lacerations to her throat, and a knife or screwdriver had been used to rip out her throat." And the reason I share this with you is not to be graphic or sensational. It's because it shows the true depravity of the person who did this to Amber. And we need to all make sure that we're aware that people like this exist in the world that you live in right now. An autopsy later confirmed that Amber had suffered 5 separate wounds to her neck, and those wounds were her cause of death. It would also show that Amber had been sexually assaulted and kept alive for 2 full days after she was abducted. It's just a terrible story. I knew some of the details about this case, not all of them. And frankly, I wish I didn't. But it's important to tell her story because, again, most of you know her because of the Amber Alert. You know she was taken. You know she was killed. And you know that she has helped many children be located. But we can't forget about who she was. And I fall in that category myself, and I have a little guilt over it. And now, as I move forward and I mention the Amber Alert in passing, instead of me just talking about the alert system itself, I'm going to remember Amber, and I hope that you all have that same type of impact as well. I also want to talk briefly about how Amber was killed, because typically we don't see people stab children, especially ones that were abducted in order to assault them. In most cases, multiple experts have come out and said that it's common for a sexual predator to murder their victim, but by strangulation, suffocation, or by beating them. It's not as usual to see a knife used. So it just gives us a little better idea of the profile of the person we're looking for. According to the Associated Press, police canvassed the area around the creek and spoke with maintenance workers at the apartment complex. The workers said that they had been near the creek just hours before Amber was found, and her body wasn't there at the time. Investigators concluded that Amber's body had been placed in the creek at a different location further upstream, and they believed the heavy storms in the days leading up to her discovery had caused her body to drift downstream to where she was eventually found. Now, that made it hard to determine the exact spot where her body had been left, and because of the storm runoff, most of the evidence had been washed away. And this is something that we hate to hear as a detective. Water and evidence, they don't mix. And unfortunately, a lot of suspects out there know that. And in fact, they will carry out their crimes at a different location and then dump the body into a body of water because they know the difficulties it will present for law enforcement. I had a case that I covered in Hawaii, the Honolulu Strangler. And this individual was a serial killer. He would go around and offer rides to his victims. And unfortunately, they would accept him because they were in a bad spot. And he would strangle them, he would kill them, and then he would tie them up in the body of water so that they would be found. But after being in the water for a substantial amount of time, he would tie them up with an extension cord. And he specifically did this to destroy any evidence. Not only does the water have an impact on the body itself, but any type of forensic evidence that you would hope to recover is also washed away. So it's not good. It's not good to have this happen, and it does make it very difficult to find any type of DNA evidence, although there is going to be a little bit of an update as far as DNA is concerned a little later in this story. As you can imagine, Amber's murder was devastating, and it shocked the nation. No one could fathom what had happened to this 9-year-old girl. She had been abducted in broad daylight, held captive, and then brutally murdered. It was every parent's worst nightmare and a complete tragedy. Authorities were more determined than ever to find the man in the black truck. They knew he needed to be taken off the street and held accountable for what he did. According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, police also canvassed several businesses in the Forest Oaks Plaza, a shopping center that faced the creek where Amber's body was found. They collected security tapes and asked employees if they recognized any men who drove dark-colored pickup trucks and might have been regular customers. In addition to those tapes, investigators were also reviewing surveillance footage from other areas around Arlington, hoping something would stand out to them. And if any footage was found that did help the case, it hasn't been released publicly. And you know how I feel about this. We're 30 years in at this point. The case hasn't been solved. I don't really think you have a lot to lose here. My guess is that nothing significant was found. And if it was, it should be released to the public at this point. You never know, by releasing even grainy footage of a truck, maybe there's something that stands out to somebody out there watching right now. And they look at it and say, I know who that truck belongs to. Again, what do you have to lose? I would put it out at this point, if you have anything, if anyone involved with this case is watching or listening right now, please, if anything was discovered from this tape, even if it seems insignificant, let the viewers decide. Let us help. So you have all the security footage and different employees that are being spoken to. And then you have local police continuing to knock on doors and follow up on leads. And while that's all going on, the FBI began working on a profile of Amber's killer. Detectives also started contacting 49 registered sex offenders who lived in the same zip code where Amber had been abducted. On January 20th, officials announced that members of the FBI's Child Abduction and Serial Killer Unit, based out of Quantico, would be traveling to Arlington to assist with the investigation, and their involvement gave local investigators renewed hope. Over the next 10 days, the FBI completed their profile of Amber's killer. According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, the profile described him as most likely a white or Hispanic man, at least 25 years old, who was familiar with the Arlington area. They believed he may carry a knife, have a bad temper, and struggle with stress management. He may have gone through a stressful life event or an argument right before the abduction and was most likely alone between January 13th and January 17th. The man may have changed his habits or show signs of increased stress after Amber was taken. He may have altered his appearance, tried to get rid of his black pickup truck, or even left the area entirely with a legitimate excuse. Maybe he had to move or he found a new job. When the FBI released this profile to the public, they made it clear that it was based off behavioral patterns, not hard evidence. The purpose wasn't to accuse anyone. It was to help jog people's memories. So I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but you guys know me. I call it how I see it. Hate to say it, but this profile is completely useless to me. What did they tell us that we couldn't already derive from the facts in this case? Jimmy told us that this guy was white or Hispanic, 20s or 30s. Yeah, we assumed he had a sharp object on him. We saw Amber's throat. And yeah, clearly he has struggles with stress management. Think about the person we're dealing with. Now, the things about him changing his appearance or trying to sell his car or moving away, again, to me, sounds like common sense. We would expect these things after someone does something like this. So after hearing this profile, I was trying to look online to see if there was more. Maybe we were just missing it. To me, it felt like they were pointing out the obvious. Now, that's probably all they could do, and they didn't want to put out anything that would mislead anyone, so I get them being conservative. But yeah, if I'm being honest, I didn't like listen to this profile and read it on paper and say, wow, man, they really dug in here. They really brought something out of their assessment with this one as far as behavioral patterns. To me, this was all things that I just assumed based on reading the evidence. I don't know. Stop the video real quick. Am I being too hard on them? Weigh in down in the comments if you're on YouTube or leave a review on audio. Let me know what you think. Did you hear this profile and go, yeah, that's interesting that they came to those conclusions? Or were you kind of listening as I was saying it going, yeah, no shit, of course. We already assumed all that. I don't know. Let me know what you think. Now, I know I'm knocking them there, but I will say this. By the end of February, investigators had received more than 1,900 tips, and they had also canvassed over 1,000 residents living in the apartments near the creek where Amber was found. Meanwhile, the FBI was using computer software to build a database of potential suspects and witness statements. While the investigation moved forward, Amber's parents did what they could to help. Donna wrote public letters to Amber's killer, demanding answers and asking him to come forward. She and Richard also began fighting to improve child safety. They didn't want Amber to die in vain. They wanted to make sure this never happened to another child. In May, investigators returned to the area where Amber's body had been found, and they were hoping that someone nearby might have remembered something new or that there might be something that they missed. But as far as we know, nothing came from that second search, and if they did find something, they've never released it. We have more to cover, and we're going to do that right after this break. All right, another sponsor that I absolutely love. You guys know me. I'm a huge animal lover, and although I don't currently own a cat, I've grew up with one almost my entire life. Shout out Tabitha. It's funny to me a little bit to be promoting a cat food when I don't even have a cat right now, but having this brand support me, I'm able to give the cat food to my sister, Megan. And as I've mentioned before, my sister doesn't have children. Her cats are her kids. Yes, I am their uncle. And she only provides them with the best. And she's noticed shinier, softer coats. And for her, which is a big deal, less stinky litter boxes. She lives in an apartment. She doesn't want any of that. And she's also able to help maintain a healthier weight with them than she was on the other foods. So if your cat is having digestive issues, throwing up their food, or simply in need of a diet upgrade, Smalls is the cat food for you. Smalls was started back in 2017 by a couple of guys home cooking cat food in small batches for their friends. A few short years later, they've served over 1 million meals to cats across the United States. Smalls cat food is protein-packed recipes with preservative-free ingredients you'll find right in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your doorstep. That's why Cats.com named Smalls their best overall cat food, and if you want to check them out, you can get 60% off your first order plus free shipping by just heading over to smalls.com/detective for a limited time only. And whenever I'm endorsing a food, I like to go over to their site and check out some of the reviews, and I pulled this one from Jennifer M. She says, quote, "After every feeding, my cat gets a burst of energy and starts running around the house. And his fur is softer and more vibrant with higher contrast. Honestly, I wouldn't recommend anything else." And one of the things that I love most about Smalls is that they work with the Humane Society. And they've donated over $1 million worth of food to help cats through the Humane Society. And they even give you a chance to donate at checkout as well. You have options like donating $5 for flea and tick medications or $7 for vaccines. So I love the fact that they're using their platform to get people to donate and help out other cats in need. So what are you waiting for? Give your cat the food they deserve. For a limited time only because you're a Detective Perspective listener or viewer, you can get 60% off your first Smalls order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/detective. That's 60% off when you head to smalls.com/detective plus free shipping. Again, one more time, that's smalls.com/detective. All right, we're back, and we're going to fast forward to July of 1996, where the Fort Worth Star-Telegram published a feature marking the six-month anniversary since Amber was murdered. In it, investigators shared that they believed the killer had gotten rid of the black pickup truck, left Arlington, but not gone far, and that he had likely killed before and would probably kill again. I agree with mostly everything they said here. Yeah, they're not going to keep that black pickup truck. They may have dumped it into a junkyard. I don't think they would stay in the immediate area where they just abducted and killed a child. As far as not going far, I don't know how you come to that conclusion if you don't have a suspect in mind. And yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say that this may not have been their first abduction, their first murder. And if they've done it once before, they're more than capable of doing it again. So yes, I understand putting it out there. But to me, and maybe I'm just pissed off because I see Peyton, my 9-year-old, in Amber, it's like saying I'm white. Yeah, we all know that by now. I get it, right? Like, you're kind of pointing out the obvious. But I think their motive here was just trying to, you know, let people know that they're still working it and to be aware of their surroundings, because as long as this person was out there, everybody's child was still in danger. And if that was the motive, I understand it, because I will tell you, I'm here to cover Amber's story so that you know the details of what happened to her. You don't just know her as the Amber Alert system, but it's also to put fear in you as well. I want you to be aware of what's out there, because even if this person's no longer alive, there are others just like him. And we're going to talk more about that at the end. So the investigation continued, and by the 1-year mark, police had received more than 6,300 leads and had investigated over 5,200 of them, which is incredible. Members of the task force said that they were frustrated that the case was still unsolved. One investigator told the Star-Telegram, quote, "I never thought we'd get this far without making an arrest." Unfortunately, after the investigation reached the 1-year mark, the department had to scale back its efforts, and there were very few new developments in the case. But detectives remained determined to find the killer, and as years turned into decades without answers, police said they never considered Amber's case cold. That's because they never went more than 180 days without receiving a new tip. And I completely agree with the mindset here. If new tips are still coming in and there's still more to look into, then the case is still active in my mind. And as far as those tips are concerned, when they come in, they are followed up on. And once a year, a detective conducts an audit of the case, going over all the evidence and information with fresh eyes. That audit also includes checking to see if any new technology exists that could help move the investigation forward. In 2021, on the 25-year mark of Amber's abduction, police revealed that there is DNA evidence in the case and that investigators were hoping to test it using new technology. According to the media, authorities have not disclosed what type of DNA was found, citing it as information only Amber's killer would know. However, they did confirm that they've considered using genetic genealogy to help identify the suspect. Police said they planned on submitting the DNA for testing in late 2021, but since that announcement, there have been no public updates. Now, what that could mean, we can go over it here. I was going to save it for the perspective, but it probably fits better right here. When we talk about DNA, there's a couple things that have to happen. First, you have to have DNA that's actually usable. And what they'll do is they'll take that DNA and they try to sequence it. And essentially what that means in layman's terms is they try to translate it into something that can be read by the genetic databases. It can be uploaded to those databases like a GEDmatch. So once they sequence it, they can put it into GEDmatch, and then genetic genealogists can take that DNA profile and try to find a familial match. And that could be a cousin, it could be an uncle, it could be a brother, a sister, it could be a third cousin, someone who's a blood-related relative. And I was going over and getting some facts. I actually went and called one of my genetic genealogists, Jeremy. Shout out to Jeremy. He's incredibly talented. And he was giving me some stats. He was saying that over 2 million people have uploaded their DNA profiles to GEDmatch, which is a lot of people, but not relatively speaking when you think about how many people are in the world, right? Not a lot. And he did say that most of the people in this database are Caucasian. So when you're looking for a suspect that's white, you're more likely to identify them. Now, if our suspect is Hispanic, the minorities that are represented in these databases is a lot less, and it makes it very difficult to identify that person. So he did say that if this suspect is in fact Hispanic, it's less likely to find that relative. And if they are white, it could be a third cousin or fourth cousin, which will take a lot more work. However, if they submitted this DNA in 2021 and it was a Caucasian male, by now, regardless of what the relationship was with the person who matched in GEDmatch, they would have completed that process by this point. So the fact that there hasn't been an arrest, it may suggest that the person we're looking for is in fact Hispanic, or there's something else going on with the DNA. And I also asked Jeremy about those questions. So first off, there could be a degradation of the DNA quality. I've seen this in some of the cases that I've worked where, because it was in water or because it was sitting out in the environment for a very long time, there's some cases where it's human DNA, but it comes back 80% not human just because it's so deteriorated by that point. There's also a possibility that the DNA was in fact not human. It could have belonged to an animal that had gotten to Amber before she was located. There's also a even less possibility that the DNA belonged to a relative like her little brother, who we know wasn't directly involved with her killing. And if that's the case, they would have ruled it out then. These could all be explanations as far as why there have been no updates with the DNA. I'm personally hoping that they got a good DNA profile, they got a good sequence, they've uploaded it to GEDmatch, and unfortunately at this time, they just don't have a match yet. And when I think about the DNA itself, and this is all speculative, to try to deduce what type of DNA they might have, it could be skin cells, it could be saliva, it could be semen. You think about Amber being in the water, it would have to be in some type of cavity that would be protected from the water. So I automatically think about the mouth. I think about the vaginal canal. I also think to a lesser degree, it could be under her nails. When you think about scratching a surface and getting skin cells under your fingernails, yes, the front part of it would be exposed to the water, but maybe something a little deeper under the nail would be protected from those environments. And I try to read between the lines of what investigators are saying, where they made the statement, the killer would only know about this. Well, what would the killer only know about? They would know how they sexually assaulted Amber. And I'm not going to get into those specifics, but what I'm basically trying to say is the killer would know how Amber was penetrated, and they would also know whether or not they ejaculated. In addition to that, if Amber fought back and maybe she scratched him on an area of his body, then he would also know that there's a potential that his DNA could have been under her fingernails. So that's my interpretation of the killer would know, because they were there for that occurrence, they were there for that crime, and they know the specifics of it. So only they would know how their DNA got on or in Amber. So that's my takeaway from it on the DNA. There's a lot of dynamics to this, and that's why I wanted to reach out to Jeremy. But that's my assessment of the DNA and why we are where we are right now. But again, I'm hopeful that they do have a good DNA profile. It's just a matter of time before we get a match. So with all that being said, where does that leave us now? Where are we currently? As of today, Amber's killer still hasn't been identified, but over the years, Amber's parents have kept the promise to make sure that her death was not in vain. They've worked with lawmakers, presidents, and child safety advocates to push for the changes that help protect countless lives. One of those changes was the Amber Hagerman Child Protection Act, which increases the penalties for sex crimes against children. And most significantly, Amber's case inspired the creation of the Amber Alert System, which is short for America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response. Since its creation, the Amber Alert System has helped bring home more than 1,000 missing children. And every year, that number grows. While Amber's murder was unimaginable, her name has become a lifeline, and her legacy is literally saving lives. She is not forgotten, and she never will be. All right, so let's dive into this perspective, and I want to talk about some of my findings and my conclusions after hearing all the evidence. First off, I believe Jimmy, and the fact that we've never been able to identify this black truck or the person driving it, I think it's fair to say that this is in fact our suspect. This is in fact the person we're looking for. What's interesting to me is that I do believe Jimmy. I think he's spot on. And he had said earlier in this episode that he had seen this truck at the laundromat earlier in the day. Well, what does that mean? To me, it's exactly the way it looks. Amber was a victim of opportunity. And we're going to talk about victim of opportunity a little bit later in this perspective. But I don't think this was premeditated. Whoever this monster is, they were at this area for something different. There's an auto tint store. There's a laundromat. There's other businesses in the area. That's why they were there. What happened is while they were there, Amber and her brother Ricky showed up. And when Ricky left, he saw an opportunity. He saw something that he's probably been imagining for months, if not years. And as law enforcement said, he may have already done this before. If he hadn't, this was an itch that he had been wanting to scratch. And when he saw Amber alone, he decided to act. So that tells me he was in that area as either an employee or a customer. So my question, if I had the chance to talk to investigators, would be, have we vetted every business, every employee that worked there, every employer that owned those businesses? Have we talked to all of them multiple times to confirm that the regulars, the customers that had been in there over the last few months, the last few years, had all been accounted for and looked into? Because to me, whoever this guy is, he had been to these businesses before. I know this sounds like common sense, and I'm praying that it's already been done. But if it hasn't, it needs to be, because that could be the key to this case. This scumbag was in this area for another reason. What was that reason? That's the big question here. If you figure out the answer to that question, you find your guy. Now, before I go to my other points, I want to really harp on this, because this is the point that we should all be taking from this case, other than trying to find the person who did this to Amber. I know there's a lot of parents that watch me and listen to this show. And you know what? If you come to me down the road in person and you say, hey, Derek, unfortunately, I couldn't listen to your stories anymore because you were scaring the life out of me. I was so anxious about my children. I never wanted to let them out of my sight. I'm going to say, good, I can live with that. You know what I can't live with? One of you coming up to me and saying, hey, Derek, I listened to all your cases because I was involved in a situation where I took my eye off my kid for just a few seconds and they were taken from me. I want to put a little fear in you guys. I don't want you to be a story that I cover. Unfortunately, we all have to be a little anxious because it only takes a second and it doesn't have to be premeditated. You could be in a position where you create the opportunity for these monsters to pounce. There are predators amongst all of us. And make no mistake about it, your children are the prey. I'm not trying to scare you. It's how I live my life. And I know I'm getting passionate about it because it pisses me off when I see kids driving around on their bikes and they're three or four streets over and I've never seen them before in my area. And I think to myself, what are these parents thinking? And if I offend you, I'm not sorry. You can't do it anymore, guys. You can't do it. And my two kids, Tenley and Peyton, they're 12 and 9. Tenley's about to be 13. You want to know how bad I am? I will sit in my driveway at the end of my truck. My daughters know that they're not allowed to go past two mailboxes on my street. They say, Dad, can we just go one quick loop? You got the tracker on our phones, you know? No, you can't. Not unless I'm going with you. Why? I can live with you being pissed off at me. When you're 18, you can do what you want. But for right now, I am responsible for your safety. And the only way I can guarantee it is if you're in my line of sight. Because if someone makes the ridiculous and stupid decision to approach you while I'm standing there, it's going to be a bad day for them. Or they're going to have to kill me to get to you. One or the other. I don't want to sit on my soapbox here and say that I've never made mistakes and I haven't, you know, looked the other way for a second and then had that moment where my heart has jumped up into my throat when I turn around and my kids aren't where I expect them to be. But I can tell you, I can count those incidences on one hand for their entire life. And every time it happens, I'm mad at myself for weeks over it. So if you don't take anything else from Amber's case and cases like this, go look at the videos of her. Go look at the photos if you're not watching on YouTube. That's your little boy or little girl. It could be any of us. No one is immune to this. It could happen to anyone. And that's what you need to take from Amber's story. Okay, back to the case. We talked about the black truck. We talked about the laundromat and that business plaza there, the auto tint store. I think there's something that needs to be dug into there if it hasn't been already. This person's a frequent flyer. They're from Arlington. They're from that area. Somebody knows them. So where does that leave us now? What I think we need to do is look at the behaviors that the FBI had disclosed to us that I thought were pretty reasonable, but also kind of obvious. This person, immediately after doing this, they dumped the truck or they got rid of the truck or quote unquote, something happened to the truck. This is someone who has friends or family members from that area more than likely. And during this period between the 13th and the 17th of January in 1996, they disappeared for a while because they were with Amber. Or they were at least at minimum displaying some type of behavior that may have not been in line with how they usually conduct themselves. It may have been minor at the time, but if you noticed anything that stood out to you where you thought, maybe they're just having a bad week, don't assume. Bring that to law enforcement. I know this could be someone you care about, but that person you care about could also be a sociopath. So think about that. And that's also why we have to continue to solicit leads and keep this story in the headlines so that people don't forget about it. I also like the approach of Donna speaking directly to the killer. We saw this with Otis Toole in the Adam Walsh case. This was something that he was basically on his deathbed and gave a dying declaration admitting to killing Adam. Now, he never was held responsible for what he did. He was in prison for other murders. But at least John and Callahan and the entire family, I don't want to call it closure, but they got the answer to who was responsible for this and what actually happened. At this point, I really think that's what Amber's family is looking for. They want the person responsible to finally come forward, even if it's right before they die, just so they know who this person is and what actually happened that day. I think it's important to keep talking to them because maybe it's going to incentivize them to eventually come forward at one point, even if it's moments before their death. That's better than having the unknown for eternity. So keep talking about this case. Keep spreading the word. And if you were in Arlington around the time when this happened and you know someone who owned a vehicle that was similar to the description given out tonight and they displayed some interesting behavior during this time period and you haven't spoken to police yet, we all would greatly appreciate if you did so. So just to recap, Amber Hagerman was abducted at around 3:18 p.m. on January 13th, 1996, while riding her bike in the parking lot of an abandoned Winn-Dixie store in Arlington, Texas. A witness saw a man force her into a black pickup truck and drive away. 4 days later, Amber's body was found in a creek about 5 miles away, and her killer has never been identified. If anyone has any information, please call the Arlington Police Department at 817-575-8823 or Crime Stoppers of Tarrant County at 817-469-TIPS. My final words, as always, go out to Richard, Donna, and Ricky. I am so inspired by your ability to take this tragedy and turn it into a means to protect others, children you don't even know. I say it all the time. I don't know if I'd be that strong. I think this would actually break me if this was my child, which is why I'm so anxious and why I'm truthfully so scared and I don't leave their side. But you are out there fighting for kids that you don't even know. And that means so much to me as a parent, and I'm sure it means so much to my listeners and viewers. But regardless of what you're doing for others, we still have to take care of you as well. You deserve justice as well. And although it's been almost 30 years, it's never too late. Keep fighting, keep pushing, and I'm right there with you. Anything I can do to help. I know you probably have a lot of support in your corner. Add one more person to the list. And I know everybody here right now is behind you as well. I hope I get the opportunity to meet you. But if I don't, I truly hope that I get the opportunity to sit right here and let everyone know that the person responsible for what happened to Amber has been caught and they're going to be held accountable for what they did. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.